Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 1:02 PM, the Pacific Summer Time. Today is September 9th. And the euro today was a little stronger. It's unwinding the short-term oversold condition, but there's still a very consistent sequence of lower rally highs. The most recent of those is around 111 and change, so it's going to have to at least take that out to even begin to suggest that we're back in a demand-dominated environment beyond some scope for additional short-term steadying. But there's a big question that's standing out there that's going to get answered this week. The DAX index, for example, is rallying, and it's rallied now for four consecutive days, and that was extending the rebound from the region of the trend mean that we saw from the middle of August. What I found particularly interesting is not so much the leaders for the year to date, which is very much characterized by some of the most defensive shares: Adidas, RWE, Deutsche Börse, Deutsche Post. Those are what we consider to be rather defensive shares because of the reliability of cash flows. What we're actually seeing now is the uptick in demand. For example, Deutsche Bank was up 10% in the last 5 days, ThyssenKrupp up almost 12%, and Continental up 10%. Infineon is one of Europe's only chip manufacturers, and it's following the rebound that we've seen, for example, in the SOX index, the Philadelphia Semiconductors Index. What is, I think, quite interesting is when we think about Germany and Europe, that the US dollar swaps curve is seriously inverted. When we look at the German sovereign curve, then it's got a significant belly in the curve between approximately the 6 month and 8 year maturities. And then, of course, the entire thing is negative. But it is pricing in the requirement for, or that Germany needs, a rate cut. Now, I can't talk and chew gum, but when we then look at the ECB's all euro area government bond yield curve, then it's certainly trending from bottom left to top right. And despite the fact that a significant portion of it is negative all the way out to maturities beyond 10 years, it does have the right shape. But what that suggests is that it is Germany and the economies that are most heavily reliant on the export sector that are most badly in need of some additional stimulus. And that is the big question about what the ECB is going to do. Because of the incredible trend that we've had in bunds over the course of the last few months, then, or really since the beginning of this year, and that is now on the cusp of being unwound, I think the longer term chart is somewhat deceiving because we did have a contract change, so I think it is more appropriate to look at the individual contract. But even there, we also see that the contract change was a catalyst for profit taking, and now some pricing in of the potential that the ECB is not going to deliver everything that the market was anticipating. And I think it's a rational argument that the ECB is not going to deliver the massive quantity of additional stimulus that everyone was hoping for simply because Germany requires it. One of the most important points that the ECB has been making is that they can't do it all on their own, that they do need some help on the fiscal side, and Germany in particular has been very adroit in saying that they're just not willing to do that. But Germany definitely needs the stimulus. They are heavily exposed to China. Well, what we did see in China in here today is that they did cut their reserve requirement for their banks. And the cuts in the reserve requirements have been pretty well correlated with the downtrend in the renminbi. Well, the renminbi was firm on Friday and a little bit easier in here today. What we're also starting to see is that the banks are starting to rebound, but of course, these are simply organs of the government. They don't give us any real insight into what is going on in the regional sector. These are the larger banks, but at least they're firming from the region of the trend mean. There's no end in sight to the protests that are going on in Hong Kong. What's particularly interesting is that when you're on the mainland, there is no commentary at all of the perspective that the protesters have. It's all any kind of reporting is from the police perspective and the central government perspective, and even then, it's pretty sparse. The H share index has bounced from 10,000, but there's still the sequence of lower rally highs. This has not been an especially consistent trend. It's been anything but really over the course of the last decade. There have been portions of consistency within that trend, particularly from 2016 up to the beginning of 2018, but that climaxed in acceleration, and resistance continues to be found at the upper side of that range around the 14,000 level. We're reasonably close to the lower side of the range, but it's going to have to do more in order to really confirm we're back in a demand-dominated environment. I've laid out a number of arguments with regard to China in today's comment of the day. I do think it is the epicenter of global risk. I think that the fudging of statistics, and there is a Beijing adage. It is that you put lipstick on your face, not on your backside. In other words, you always show your best, you always put the best foot forward. Well, that's particularly true of the statistics that are being put out, but it also represents the face-saving exercise that the Communist Party is going through, that they're trying to make the economy look better than it is in order to look strong from a negotiating perspective. And there is then the very significant question about what can you in fact believe? One thing that is, I think, quite interesting was the story that we had last week about the drones that were used to kill off 98% of the army worms that have been invading from the over the southern border and eating hundreds of thousands of hectares of crops. No other country in the world has had any success in stopping them, but suddenly, with the real prospect of agricultural price inflation, and that is particularly evident in China today. Suddenly, China has been able to come up with a solution that kills 98% of these moths. Quite how they've been able to do that, there doesn't seem to be a lot of commentary about that. And of course, there is a strong likelihood that it's just pure fake news, that it didn't happen at all. And this is one of the problems that a lie can run around the world before the truth has got its boots on. I think that was Winston Churchill had that to say, and it's particularly true of the kind of news coverage that we're getting out of China right now. It's an extraordinarily difficult market to monitor because the capital markets are completely manipulated by the government. And that is going to remain the case until it isn't. And when it isn't, then we are going to be presented with a very significant issue for all the countries that are reliant on China. And of course, Germany is an important one of those, and so is Australia. Well, Australia is engaged in both monetary and fiscal stimulus, and the ASX 100 or 200, excuse me, is bouncing from the region of the trend mean. What's, I think, also worth considering is that the resources index is right in the region of the trend mean, and it has been trending higher now for over 3 years already. It's being supported by the weakness of the currency over the same time frame, but the Australian dollar has been rallying rather significantly over the course of the last few weeks. Excuse me, the last few days. It put in an upside key reversal 4 days ago. It's been following through on the upside. This is at least a reversion back towards the mean. Of course, considering the fact that the RBA is cutting interest rates and the government is engaged in fiscal stimulus, one of the central arguments for trying to preserve the economic expansion would be to allow the currency to take the brunt of selling pressure, and that has certainly worked over the course of the last year and a half, and I don't see any reason to question that that isn't going to remain the case. Now, when we think about what's going on in India, they have their own challenges in terms of the requirement, really, to try and handle the housing finance sector. But the Nifty index is steadying from the region of that 11,000 level. There have been occasions previously where it has dipped below the trend mean, so I think we can continue to expect occasional periods when it does that. I think if it can continue to find support here and push back above the trend mean, then we're still in a bull market environment. More recently, I have been paying attention to the outlook for the wider market rather than simply the 50 shares within the Nifty. The BSE 500 is right in the region of the lower side of its range, but it is also firming. And I think as a broad market index, it's an appropriate one to keep an eye on. Well, with some weakness in the dollar, then other currencies have been steadying, and the rupee has been at least stable in the region of 72. When we look at the commodity producers, then the South African rand has confirmed support in the region of the lows put in the third or fourth quarters of 2018. So we're getting at least some unwinding of the short-term oversold condition there. And the Brazilian real, which had been selling off with the I think the public outcry about burning or deforestation is probably the better way of thinking about it in the Amazon. And the real was weaker again in here today. And if we simply think about the consistency here, that this whole range over the course of the last 12 months looks like a consolidation prior to a breakout. So it does look likely that the real is going to continue to weaken from here. And when we think then about the Bovespa index, it's been trending higher in a very consistent manner, but it is likely to continue to be supported by the weakness of the currency. And the other way around, or the other way of looking at the weakness of the FTSE in here today, is because of the continued rebound that we're getting in the pound. The UK had negative growth in the second quarter, and if, well, I suppose the technical definition of a recession is two consecutive negative quarters. Now, there was some better sales data coming through for July in here today that did help the pound to rally. There is a deep oversold condition relative to the trend mean. There is still a sequence of lower rally highs. It's going to have to do more than it has done in order to really demonstrate that we're back in a demand-dominated environment, but at least it has bounced from the 120 area and done so in a dynamic manner. That at least suggests that there is scope for a reversion back to the mean, and the fact that it is also rallying faster than the euro is also, I think, worth highlighting. That was an incredibly pronounced pullback from the failed break above 115, all the way down to a new low, and now this is looking increasingly like another failed downside break. So, the range that's persisted, which has been rather volatile over the last 3 years, remains in place. I've been rather supportive of the hardball tactics that Boris Johnson has deployed, unfortunately, other MPs haven't shared his zeal. And that's a rather unfortunate set of circumstances because the only possible way the UK is going to get any kind of deal that it can stomach, or at least push through Parliament, would be to play hardball. In if they are in fact going to go ahead and publish their plans for exiting, then that is going to further weaken the UK's ability to negotiate. It's going to weaken the ability of the UK government to get a deal that could pass Parliament, and it's going to further extend the problem issues that continue to plague the Brexit negotiations. So that does bring forward the potential that the only possible way to get this question solved is to have an election and to restock Parliament with new MPs who have a mandate for whatever course of action the people decide. There is no way that they're going to agree to an election as long as a no-deal Brexit is even possible. They just simply don't trust Boris Johnson. That's a problem. That when the Prime Minister's personal integrity and or the perception of that integrity is so low that his own colleagues don't trust him, then that does create a rather difficult environment. Well, when we think about the market, every time it's looked like the UK is going to remain closer to the EU, then it has we've seen the pound rally, and then every time it looks like it's going to have a hard Brexit, it tends to leave. So I think what the market is pricing in right now is that the pound is going to remain closer to the EU. Now, when we look at Wall Street, the S&P 500 was relatively unchanged in here today. It's within really only about 50 points of its all-time peak, and this has been a I think an impressive breakout from that range that persisted for all of August. I think it is quite likely that we are going to see additional upside in here. This continues to look like a bullish consolidation. It does not look like the kind of conditions that we had in September of last year, despite protestations to that effect that we've seen in a number of news outlets over the course of the weekend. As long as the index is finding support in the region of the trend mean, we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. Then, when we think about the gold market, the potential for the quantity of bond yields that are still negative to decrease in line with the potential for bunds to unwind their overbought condition, then that is likely to weigh on gold. There is a wide overextension present. So far, this is a pullback, but it is not larger than what we saw in July and June. So there is still scope for it to continue to find support. But when we look at the longer term chart, then the breakout has been particularly impressive. In fact, the size of the breakout that we've seen is almost identical to that first breakout that we saw in gold back in 2002. There have been a very large number of parallels between the shape and duration and size of the moves that we've seen in gold since 2016, compared to what we saw from 1999 through to 2002. That does potentially suggest that we are going to see a first step above the base, and the top of the base is at $1,350. So there is ample scope for some consolidation, and that consolidation could take anything up to a few months or even a year before we see a resumption of the bull market trend. So there is risk here in the gold market following such an impressive breakout. It's quite normal that we would get a first step above the base, and there is scope that that might now be unfolding. The big question is, of course, when we think about the macro factors that are affecting the precious metal markets, There are short-term considerations, and certainly the correlation with the total of negative yielding bonds is an important one in the short term. But the wholesale adoption of modern monetary theory as a suite of policies for an increasingly large number of governments is a medium to longer term bullish characteristic for gold and the precious metals, and suggests that there will be a buy on the dips. Silver is pulling back from the $20 area, and platinum has paused in the region of 1,000. So these are areas where it was reasonably predictable that we would see some argument for profit taking a rise. Now, the real measure of whether we're in a new bull market will be the extent to which they can hold on to the moves that we've seen put in over the course of the last 5 weeks. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.